My name is Alyssa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Alyssa.
Thank you for the lead, Chance. Also, don't listen to him when he tells you, like, not to obsess about what you're going to say because you have plenty of time to do it. Amanda asked me to speak last week, and, like, instantly I was equal parts humbled and absolutely certain that I was going to embarrass myself. So I obsessed about it for a week and didn't think of anything good to say. So here I am. My sobriety date is May 8th, 2011. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor women. And like James said, my home group is the Late Night Red Door group. So if any of you guys know me at all, like my uniform is like yoga pants and like a sports bra and like a dude's t-shirt. So I like got dressed up to come out tonight, and I'm walking out of the house and my roommates are in the kitchen and they're like, whoa, like, where are you going? And so I told them, and like, they're normal. And I told them what I was doing, and one of my roommates, she was like, oh, like, are you nervous? And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to puke. And my other roommate, Derek, just like looks at me and laughs, and he's like, you want a beer? And I'm like, so anyways, so I will tell how it was, what happened, and what it's like now as non-profanely as I can. There is a child here, so I was born in Bradenton, to a pretty average family. Like, I don't want to say normal, because I feel like that word's misconstrued. Like, normal is definitely not average. My mom was a fiend. My mom was, like, pretty strung out, and like running around with my dad, who was a potential alcoholic, bless his heart, for living with my mother. But so when I was around 2, we moved to Tampa, and my parents split up shortly after that. So we went to live with, I have an older brother, he's 22 months older than me, so we're very close. We went to live with my father because my mom was dealing with what she was dealing with at the time. So we lived with my father, like we lived with my grandfather at the time, you know, while obviously he was like newly divorced and getting his stuff together. And as far as that goes, like I had a pretty okay childhood. Looking back, like there was definitely a lot of love. You know, my father loved us and he did a lot for us. My mother loved us as well, you know, and she ended up getting clean and sober when I was around 4 or 5. So she came back into our lives at that time, and like we went back and forth between the houses. My mom got visitation rights and all of that. So when I was like 7 or 8, my mother remarried. She married this biker dude who was also in the program. And my father, shortly after that, knocked up this lady and then married her. So I ended up with a stepmother, a stepfather, and a little brother. Which was all good and well, but like, so my mom married this biker dude, and my dad married this like Spanish lady from Brooklyn who's like super Roman, like super Catholic, and so they were like polar opposites. So it was like a very confused child, you know, like I never really knew what to do. Like, I went to my mom's house, and it was like essentially an episode of Sons of Anarchy but sober, and At my dad's house, it was, you know, like the white finger glove test for dust and like whatever. So I was a pretty good kid towards the beginning, you know. My brother and I were both overachievers, so I was a straight A student. Like, I was kind of awkward. Like, I was in the math league, and I took the ACTs like in 7th grade. Like, I was like very, very much an overachiever. And I made really good grades, and just that was it, you know what I mean? And I did that for a little while, and, like, I don't know, I was maybe 12, and, like, I just decided, I made this, like, executive decision, 12 years old, I had no idea what I was doing, that, like, the math league thing wasn't working out, so I was going to try something else. So I, like, started, like, you know, stealing cigarettes and, like, smoking in the bathroom. I remember getting busted smoking in the bathroom before school with, like, before band practice with my French horn case and, like, a pack of Camel Lights, which was such an awkward scene. And, you know, I just started acting out. And, like, I remember I snuck out of my window when I was, you know, I guess maybe I was still 12, like, going on 13. I snuck out of my window and, like, went to hang out with some kids from school. And, like, me and these two kids drank a bottle of Bacardi. And that was that. And that was the first time I drank. Like, me and two other 13-year-old kids just, like, smashed this handle. And, like, I don't really remember what happens. Like, I don't know. I just remember walking home and, like, the sun's coming up. And I'm, like, people are jogging and, like, walking their dogs. And I'm just, like, incoherent. You know what I mean? Like, stumbling through the suburbs. So that's what happened. And, like, I started, like, I don't know. I, like, found punk rock. I, like, started listening to the Sex Pistols and, like, MXPX, and I was just like, yeah, like, this is it, you know? And when I was 13, actually, so I'm in eighth grade, my grades are steadily declining, but my social life is on the up, for sure. And so I was at a family function at my uncle's house, and I remember seeing this, like, they had the collection of, like, coins and, like, whatever, like, little knickknacks on their counter, like, by the junk drawer or whatever. I remember seeing this pocket knife and being like, that's sweet. Like, so I just took it and, like, stuck it in my pocket and went to school and, like, showed it off because I thought it was cool. And so I get arrested. So 13, I get my first felony for possession of a weapon or firearm in school property and get kicked out of school. And I'm still living with my father at this time. And so, you know, I get, like, sent to a, like, youth program at the courthouse. And I get sent to, like, family therapy. And I'm just, like, going off the deep end at this point. I'm like, well, I'm going for it. Like, I'm going all in. You know what I mean? So I'm, like, fist fighting my dad for, like, no reason. Like, no, I'm just an angry kid at this point. So I, like, went to ATOS for a couple days. And then, they ended up suspending me, or, like, expelling me anyway, so I don't know why I did that. But you don't really have a choice in the matter when you're 13, I guess. So I remember going to the bookstore with my dad and him being like, okay, like, get a book to read while you're in ATOS. So I grabbed the Motley Crue autobiography, right? And so I get super into hair metal. And at, like, as far as my alcoholism is concerned, like, Motley Crue was really the beginning of the end for me. So, yeah, that was that. And I remember being at family therapy one day with my father and my mother. My father brought me there, and I was supposed to be going home for the night with my mom to stay with her. It was, like, a Wednesday night. That was the night that we went over there. And sitting in the room, and my father was talking to the therapist, and, like, I don't know, I'm, like, sitting there being angsty or whatever, and he starts saying, like, he's like, I can't do this anymore. And he looks at me and he's like crying and he's like, I'm so sorry, but I can't do this. I can't have you in my house. I can't have you around Ricky, who was my little brother at the time. He's still my little brother. At the time he was like, you know, whatever, at a very impressionable age. He's 6 years younger than me, so that puts him at, like, 6 or 7. So he, like, tells me, like, you can't be a part of this family anymore. And I'm like, whatever, you know, mad. So I go to live with my mom and my stepfather, who are both in the beginning stages of a relapse, which I didn't know what that was at the time. You know, I didn't know what it looked like. I knew how I grew up. I knew the people that I grew up with who were sober. You know, I knew that they used to have a problem, but I didn't really understand anything about the program. So I go to live with them, and I'm just, whatever, an insane 13-year-old, bless their hearts. And so I start high school, right? So this is, like, during the summer after eighth grade. So I move out there. I start high school in a different town. Like, I didn't know anybody. And on the first day of high school, so I go and, like, I know nobody. And I'm walking through the lunchroom, and these girls, like, call me over, and, like, one of them's wearing a Misfits shirt. And she's like, you want to sit with us? And I'm like, yeah. Definitely want to sit with you guys. So I hang out with them, and then the chick in the Misfits shirt, her name was Amanda. Amanda's like, do you need a ride after school? And I'm like, yeah, totally. The bus is lame, you know? And So I meet her after school out front, and, you know, we're walking through the parking lot, and she gets to her car, and she's got this big, like, F-250 pickup. I went to high school in Sefner, for those of you who've ever been there. It's a terrible, terrible place, and I hope to never go back. So we get in the truck, and she, like, lifts up the, like, center console thing, and there's, like, just a couple lines laid out. And I'm just like, I have arrived, you know? First day of high school, like, I made it, guys. And, you know, I apologize in advance. Drugs are a part of my story. If you have a problem with it, read more about alcoholism and or call your sponsor. So that was the beginning of my illustrious high school career, highlights of which include getting suspended on a regular basis, getting into a foot chase on the roof with a school deputy, essentially not being there a lot. But somehow I, like, maintained my place in, like, AP classes, and, like, I was still in, you know, honors program and everything. But my grades steadily fell. You know, the less I went to school and the less work I did. So I made friends with, like, the weird kids, obviously, because I was definitely really weird. And they were amazing. And I love them still, you know. Not many of them are like us yet, but they definitely have, you know, a special place in my heart. Like, at that age, like, you're very impressionable. And when you find people that, like, you know, they, like, we understood each other, you know, like, because, I don't know. We were just all really angsty and, like, listened to David Bowie and were super socially awkward. So I started drinking a lot, like, right out of the gate. Like, freshman year, all my friends were older than me, and we drank a lot. So, you know, and I guess it started on weekends, and, like, it graduated towards, like, you know, like, maybe a couple nights during the week. And, you know, while my drinking is progressing, other things are progressing, too. So by the time I was 16, I decided that high school was not for me. My mother was in full-blown relapse at this time, and I came home one day, and, like, literally the night before, I had she had, like, broken down to me and told me how much she loved me and my brother and how important we were to her, and, you know, she was having issues with men and whatnot, and there's this one that was always around, and I hated him. He was such a jerk. So she, like, swore to me that this guy wasn't going to come back, and, like, she was going to do better by us, and she was going to do better by herself, and she, like, broke down. She was, like, in tears. And the next day I came home, and this dude's, like, chilling, just, like, posted up, like, King of the Castle style, and she's plastered. So I just, like, okay. So I got my stuff, and I left. And I moved into a house with five dude friends of mine who I went to high school with, who had already graduated, and I slept on the couch for, like, 8 months and drank all the time. And I was working full-time, and, like, that was my justification for leaving school, was that I had left home, and I worked three jobs, and, like, I needed to support myself, but the truth of the matter is, like, I didn't pay rent for 8 months. I slept on the couch. Like, I worked that way to support the way that I drank and the way that I used. Absolutely. But I convinced myself for a long time that, like, that wasn't why I left at all. So, 16, living on my own, yada, yada, yada. The next couple years are a blur. For sure. I did a lot of moving around after I left that house. And I always thought that going somewhere new or, like, hanging out with different people or getting a different job was going to improve the situation for me. You know, like, I always thought in my mind that these are the reasons that, like, I can't get along drinking this way or I can't get along living this way. You know, it's because the people around me had a problem with it. When really I was just, like, a blazing idiot, you know what I mean? And I acted like a jerk all the time. I was a mean drunk. I liked to fight dudes, which is a bad idea. I always pick the wrong ones, for sure. So, you know, that continued. I moved around a little bit. The farthest I made it was Jacksonville. When I was 18, I moved to Jacksonville with two of my best friends, and I tried doing the school thing for a minute, which didn't work out. Excuse me. I remember going to class a couple times, and like I had a Saturday morning sociology class, and I don't remember this, but my best friend, who is also not one of us, will tell me on a regular basis that she came to wake me up on a Saturday morning for my sociology class, and I woke up, grabbed my sociology book, and threw it at her head and told her, I'm not effing going to class. So she was like, I never tried to convince you to go after that. So I just kind of stopped going. And so I'm going to backtrack a little bit. When I was 17, I was living in a house in Tampa, actually right behind 33. And like sometimes my mom would come around and she'd be like, oh, I used to go there. And I'd be like, whatever, lady. And like I was really... I think this is the point where I crossed over the threshold. This is the point in my life where I began to lose the power of choice. But I was oblivious at the time. You know, I had no idea what that was or what that meant. And I was introduced to my drug of choice. And I was on my way to the doctor one day, and I was blasted on said drug of choice and wrecked my car and broke my leg. So I was on crutches for like a couple months, and I used that obviously as an excuse to keep doing what I had been doing and like drinking like a mad person and what have you. So I broke my leg, and I couldn't work for the couple months that I was on crutches. Obviously, I worked in a kitchen at the time, and you can't get around on the line very well on crutches. So I ended up being broke and having to move out. One of my best friends, Stephanie, and I had made plans to move to Jacksonville. So in the meantime, I moved out of the house that I was in, and I went to Lakeland to stay with her family until our house was ready. And so I didn't have any money when I went to leave the house, and I was living with a friend of mine. And I just told him the situation. I was like, listen, dude, like I don't have any money. I haven't been working, and I'm leaving, basically. And he was just like, well, can you leave the cat? Like, in lieu of rent, like, can you leave me this cat? And I was just like, yeah, totally. Like, I wasn't taking care of the cat at the time, regardless. And I was, like, mad about it. I was offended that he asked for my cat. But I didn't have any rent money to give him, so I just left the cat and I dipped out. And so I lived in Lakeland for about a month and a half. It wasn't very long. Long enough to know that I will never live in Lakeland again. There's absolutely nothing out there worthwhile. Like I have a lot of good friends out there, but they're not doing anything either. So, when I was living in Lakeland, as far as the methods, to use went, I progressed, about as far as you can go, and I'll leave it at that. And, things got steadily worse quickly. So I moved to Jacksonville, and I thought that was going to be it. You know, I was like getting a house, like finally I was going to have my own house with two of my best friends, and like stuff was going to work out, you know, and I was going to be going to school and I was going to be doing whatever, and it just didn't. I was there for about 9 months, and each month was worse than the last one. I ended up leaving after a situation with one of my roommates who actually robbed me. But so it wasn't even about the fact that he robbed me. It was the fact that he robbed me and then I didn't have money to pay rent. So I moved back home. I moved to Tampa and lived in a couple different houses, just kind of crashing where I could until the people there were fed up with me. And then I moved on to the next place. At one point, I was living at home with my mother again, who was still in a full-blown relapse, and we were using together. And I went out of town to cop, and I came back, and I left her with, we had gone in on whatever together, so I left her with half of what I had gotten, and I left, and I came back like 4 days later, and I found her overdose. And I didn't know what to do. Right, because I was so strung out at the time. I had no like conception of what people do in situations like this. Like it went through my mind, like maybe she should go to a hospital, but I like couldn't physically comprehend that. Like, I couldn't do it. And so I called my stepfather, who, him and my mother were separated at the time, but he was living down the road. And I called him, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and he doesn't pick up, obviously. So I call him, and I call him, and I call him until he picks up, and he says, you know, I'll be right over there. So he comes over, and we get her cleaned up and whatnot. And he says, I'll take her to the hospital, but you have to come behind me. You have to promise me that you'll follow me. So I did. And I got to the hospital, and I was with my boyfriend at the time. So we took my car, and we, like, followed them there. And I pull up outside the hospital, and my stepdad's standing there with my uncle, my mom's brother, who, needless to say, did not approve of my lifestyle. So I sit out there for a second, and I decide that I'm going to keep dodging the issue. So I go home, and I grab all my stuff, and I leave. And I move to Spring Hill, which is where I would eventually meet my bottom. So I move to Spring Hill with this dude I've known for like 3 days. We move in together, you know, we're selling drugs together, like, doing highly illegal things. And I ended up getting arrested February 8th, 2011. It was my initial arrest date. To give you a little insight as to where I was at this time, I had essentially dropped to a point that I never thought I would be able to go. You know, like, anything that I had ever told myself that I would never do, I had done. You know, my cousin passed away from a drug overdose January 8th, 2011, so a month before I was initially arrested. I showed up to his funeral late because it was at the pharmacy. I was in the bathroom for most of the service, and afterward, at my aunt and uncle's house, who just lost their son to drugs, and I'm completely obliterated. You know, I showed absolutely no respect to them, or to myself, or to my family. You know, and that was a hard amends to make, but needless to say, so I get arrested February 8th outside of a pharmacy, and I was in for about a week before I was bonded out. I was not in contact with my family at this time, but the arresting detectives found my brother as an emergency contact on my license and got in touch with him, who got in touch with my father, who came to bail me out. So I get told, like, I'm in the infirmary, and I get told that I'm getting bonded out, and I'm like, sweet, my boyfriend, I think it's my boyfriend, right? So I get out, my dad's there, and I'm like, shit. And not who I wanted to see. So he takes me, we go to a hotel for the night, and he, like, gives me the night to chill out. And in the morning, we went to, I don't know where we were going. Like, I think he already knew what was going to happen because we ended up going back to the bondsman. Like, and on the way, he had, you know, I guess what started as a civil conversation, but did not remain a civil conversation for very long, you know, where he told me that I was out of control, that I needed help, and that I needed to go to rehab for him to continue to help me. And I basically told him those weren't my plans. That's not what I was going to do. So he drove me back to the bondsman, and I went back to jail. It took my boyfriend at the time, like, another 2 days to bond me out. So I got out, and the first thing I did was go to the pharmacy, which is exactly what I had just gone to jail for. And I just couldn't see past it, you know? Like, I was so deep in this, like, I couldn't see past the next time I wouldn't have to deal with Alyssa, you know? Like, it was so painful to be awake. It was so painful to be conscious and live with, like, the things that I had done and, like, who I was and who I had become. Like, nothing mattered to me beyond getting that next one. So that's what I did. And it took a couple months before I finally came to the realization, like, I need to stop doing this. Not getting, you know, wasted, obviously. Like, I didn't need to stop drinking or doing what I was doing. Like, I needed to stop doing the stuff that I got arrested for. So my boyfriend didn't agree with that, and that didn't end well. So I left after things got bad, and I'm not going to go into too much detail about this time period, but it got really bad. And I ended up leaving the house that we were living at and just kind of roaming the streets and staying where I could, crashing where I could. You know, I wasn't doing what I had been doing before, so I was, like, doing odd things to make money, like scrapping metal and, like, doing essentially anything I could to get by. And one night, it dawned on me. Like, the situation of my life and what had become just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I remember sitting behind the wheel of this truck, and these two guys that I was, like, running with were under the hood tweaking with something. And I just had this moment of clarity, and it's what we call a foxhole prayer, and I had no idea what that was at the time. And I just looked at my life, and I thought, like, how did I get here? And it was the first time, I think, that I ever really stopped to ask myself that. And I guess my higher power was listening, because the next morning I get thrown in jail again. And that was that. It was Mother's Day. It was May 8th, 2011. And, like, all night the night before and all morning, I had been thinking about the fact that I needed to call my mother and tell her Happy Mother's Day, so, which I didn't do, obviously. So I get through booking, and I, like, get to the pod, and I, like, make my phone call, and I call my mom, and she's like, what'd you do now? And I'm like, Happy Mother's Day. And she's like, shit, you know? So at that point, I was, like, kind of relieved, though, you know? It was a relief to know that I didn't have to keep fighting. And I went to court in the morning, and so I got arrested for shoplifting. I got arrested for petty theft. And I got arrested for stealing a sandwich, okay? That's what happened. I'm just going to let you guys know that. So in my arrest report, the cop's like, what'd you need with this sandwich? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. I was hungry, obviously. You know, like, I haven't eaten in 7 days. Back off. And so I go to court, and the judge is like, well, it says here that you were hungry and you didn't have a place to sleep, so I'll let you stay in jail if you want. And I was like, no, that's cool. Like, I'll go. That's fine. Meanwhile, I'm out on bond in a different county. So he RORs me. But I wake up in Pasco County Jail 4 days later. I'm like, why am I still in jail? Obviously, my bond got revoked. And I stayed there for 27 days before I was transported to Pinellas County to face my other charges. So when I was in Pasco County, like I said, like I felt a sense of relief when I first got there. And I called my father after maybe a week, and it was the first time that I talked to him and was willing to listen to what he had to say, because I was defeated, because I was out of options, because what Alyssa was doing and, like, the plans Alyssa had for herself weren't working anymore. You know, I was at the end of my rope, truly, and I went to my first meeting there in Pasco County, and I'll never forget. This one lady told a story, and the story goes something like this. So there's a guy who's walking down the street, and he falls into this hole. This, like, pit opens up in the ground in front of him, and he just falls in, and he can't get out. The walls are too high, and he sees people walking, passing him on the street above him, and so he calls out, and he sees a priest walking by, and he says, Father, Father, can you help me? So the guy stops, and he looks down. He says, Father, I got down this hole, and I don't know how to get back out, can you help me? And he says, like, oh, we'll say 10 Hail Marys, and you'll figure it out. I don't know how that stuff works. I was never religious. So the guy, the priest keeps walking, and the guy's like, what the hell? I'm still down here. And he sees a doctor walking by. So he says, doctor, can you help me get out of here? The doctor looks down, he writes him, you know, a script, and he says, take two of these, call me in the morning. And the guy's like, what? The doctor keeps walking. And he sees another guy walking by. So he says, you know, Mister, can you please help me? I don't know how I got down here, and I don't know how to get out. So the guy stops, and he looks at him, and he looks at the hole, and he looks at the walls, and he jumps down in there with him. And he says, the guy says to him, right, sorry. So the guy says to him, like, well, what, like, why did you do that? And we're both stuck down here, you idiot, right? And the guy's like, well, and the guy says to him, I've been down in this hole before, and I know how to get out. My name is so-and-so. You know, tell me about yourself. And, like, so that was my introduction to this program. And the stories that I heard in there made me feel like I was somewhere that I belonged for the first time, maybe ever. Definitely for the first time in a long time. And that never left, you know. I went to more meetings before I got out. By the time all was said and done, after 4 months, I was put on drug offender probation for 24 months. The possibility of early termination, I was sentenced to 90 meetings in 90 days with an outpatient program for 6 weeks. Excuse me. I'm actually a lady, if you guys didn't know. So I get out, and I'm back in contact with my family. My mother lets me come stay with her for a little while, and all is going well. I basically lived at this place. There was a clubhouse in Brandon, which is where I lived when I got out. And there were meetings there all day, every day. There was, like, a pool table with, like, tables. It was open all day long. There was, like, a recovery store. It was an amazing place. And this guy ran it at the time who had been in one of the motorcycle clubs with my stepfather, and I'd known him since I was 5 years old. And needless to say, like, there were a lot of these dudes when I came back in that were still sober, that had, like, known me when I was younger, that watched me grow up and watched me go out and do the things that I was doing, and just kind of waited patiently, you know, for me to make my own mistakes. And they were there for me when I found this program on my own. When I got out, I was, like, absolutely desperate. I was willing to do anything you guys told me, because I looked around these rooms and you guys laughed and you guys smiled, and I didn't know what that was like. Like, I followed people to the bathroom, you know, because, like, I still didn't really buy it. I knew that you guys were like me. I thought that you guys were like me because of the stories that you told me, but I didn't really think that there was hope for somebody like me to get better. Needless to say, I got a sponsor in the other fellowship at 4 months, right when I got out. I ended up making the hop between fellowships at 6 months, and I started working steps with my sponsor, who was a gentleman who had been running the recovery club. By 9 months, I had finished working my steps, and everything changed. You know, I didn't know a lot about this disease when I got here, so I had to be taught what alcoholism was. You know, I had to be taught that it's a threefold disease. That's a mental obsession, a physical craving, and a spiritual malady. I didn't know what any of those things meant. But you guys taught me. And you guys taught me through experience that there's hope to come back from that. You know, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, like, our experience can absolutely benefit others. And I believe that firmly today. You know, when I got here, there were people in these rooms that had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, and they stuck around to carry it to the next person. And that person was me. So I stay here. I stay in these rooms to keep doing exactly what those people did for me, you know. That's why when I ask to get to speak in front of, like, a million of you, I say, yeah, sure, no problem. Because this program saved my life. Absolutely. Without a doubt. Admitting that I was an alcoholic after I learned more about this disease wasn't really a problem. The second and the third steps for me are where I experienced a lot of growth. Because I had spent a long time being very adverse to the idea of God, being very adverse to the idea of any sort of loving, almighty being, what have you. But I had to work through my own prejudices. I did that with my sponsor, working through the book. And when I said the third step prayer, I got down on my knees, and my sponsor got down on his knees next to me, and I read the third step prayer, and I just, like, felt this wave of relief. Like, I felt this weight being lifted off of me, and, like, I started crying. And my sponsor, who was this big burly biker dude, started crying too. It was like a mess. It was probably a hilarious situation from the outside looking in, but it was beautiful, you know. It was wonderful because he had been there. You know, just like everyone in this room has been there. And if you haven't worked the steps, if you haven't had that moment, if you haven't felt the presence and the power of God, get a sponsor and work the steps. Because it's here. And it's in these rooms. And there are a million people across this country, across the world, who are willing to keep carrying that message. One of the biggest gifts that I've received in my sobriety is the chance to continue carrying that message. And that comes in many forms. You know, it comes through being of service. It comes through speaking. It comes through talking to newcomers after a meeting, grabbing somebody that I don't recognize and talking to her after the meeting. You know, it comes through taking girls through the book and transmitting this experience to them the best that I can. It's truly a beautiful way of life, you know. And I'd like to point out, too, I call it a way of life because that's what the book calls it. You know, this program isn't about not drinking. This program isn't about not using. It doesn't say in the book a way of not drinking. It says in the book a way of life. You know, and that's what this program is for me. That's what this program has given me. A life that I never could have imagined and never thought that I wanted or needed. And it's because of you guys. It's because of the steps. Because, I don't know, it's just because, you know, it's fucking amazing. So, I mean, that's my story, and like, just as a qualifier, the things that I went through are not requirements for AA membership. Like, you didn't have to come from a broken home, you didn't have to use the things that I use or drink the drinks that I drank. Like, you didn't have to be homeless. Like, you didn't have to be facing a prison sentence at 19 years old. Like, none of those have anything to do with the fact that I'm an alcoholic. The reason that I'm an alcoholic is because at some point in my drinking career, I lost the power of choice. You know, and that looks different for everyone. So, having crossed that threshold, I'm sure pretty early on and, like, continuing on for a little while, when I got here and when I was told that that's what alcoholism truly was, and that if I was a real alcoholic and I believed what was in the book, that no human power could help me, that I had placed myself beyond human aid. So my options were to continue on, as I had been, or to accept spiritual help. And that's what I decided to do, you know. As an alcoholic, I cannot stop drinking or stay stopped on my own willpower. I cannot stop drinking for Alyssa. I cannot stop drinking for anybody in this room. I love you all, but you're all human and you all fail me at some point. My reliance in this program has to come first and foremost from a higher power. And I'm just so grateful that that's the way it is. You know, I'm grateful to be an alcoholic today. I'm grateful to have this life. You know, I'm absolutely fulfilled and humbled every time I walk through these doors. And I plan on staying, so thanks for listening.